the industry podcast of VDMA.
Donald Trump has made more headlines in the first 4 months of his second term than any other president before him. His economic and trade policy has unsettled investors and market participants around the globe. And his aggressive rhetoric and his large-scale tariff offensive have given rise to the feeling that the US has become at least an insecure partner, if not an adversary. How much will the new US economic and trade policy affect companies on both sides of the Atlantic? How do companies deal with tariff announcements of which no one knows how long they will last? And will Donald Trump actually succeed in bringing production back to the USA with this policy? US tariffs and beyond, that's what we want to talk about today in the VDMA's industry podcast. And I'd like to welcome Andrew Adair, our VDMA expert on US business and foreign trade. Hello, Andrew.
Hello, Holger.
And joining us from Brussels is Holger Kunze, who heads the VDMA European office there. Hello to you too.
Hello.
My name is Holger Pohl, and I am head of communications at Europe's largest machinery and equipment manufacturers industry association. Let's start this podcast with a brief assessment of Donald Trump's first 4 months. Was it all basically foreshadowed? Could we all have foreseen what was going to happen? Or is it okay if we all are bewildered, Andrew?
Well, that's a great question. I think many people are surprised, but they shouldn't be. Because, well, let's take stock of where we are. 10% tariffs on virtually all imports into the United States, including from Europe. That was announced by Trump on the campaign trail. High China tariffs, that was also announced by Trump on the campaign trail. And a reversion on steel and aluminum tariffs of 25%. He did that during the first term. These are things that we in VDMA told the members to expect upon inauguration, and indeed they are in place. So we shouldn't be surprised by that. I think what has really surprised some of us, including myself, is high tariffs on Mexico and Canada as well. After all, their neighbors and free trade partners of the United States are extremely aggressive. That's been, for me, maybe the biggest surprise. High tariffs on automotive, so cars and automotive parts, also a surprise. He threatened to do that throughout the entire first term, never did it. Now he's done it. And I think another surprise that's really making the business community most upset and you know, also the American people ultimately, is that the tariff agenda is coming before any kind of economic stimulus. So the first term he did a big tax cut, which boosted the economy. Then he got into tariffs. And that way, the tariff impact was not so much felt. And this time, we have a big tariff impact before we have any kind of stimulus. So I think that's another surprise.
Holger, in Brussels, the Brussels bubble was completely taken by surprise, or did you see what was coming?
No, I don't think that they were taken by surprise. Maybe they were surprised about the very rude rhetoric against the European Union, but let's look into the measures Trump took. I think that that was more or less expected, and we also see in our conversations with EU decision makers that, let's say, preparation work has been going on since he came into office or he was even elected. So no surprise, still quite puzzled about how to deal with that, but preparation work is going on.
So Andrew, Donald Trump's been in office now for 4 months. How would you summarize his economic policy so far?
Well, we had one of Trump's closest advisors, Brian Lanza, here, and he said the theme is going to, in January, he said the theme will be disruption. And I think that is absolutely right. You know, they say in Silicon Valley, move fast and break things. And that's sort of what he's been doing. Okay, you have tariffs. That's clearly the biggest item. You have, I would say another theme is the weaponization of economic policy. So really going after specific companies by name. And kind of keeping them from speaking out, and you know, lobbying and pushing back on the government is part of the American, you know, it's what people do in Washington. That's why you have this huge lobbying industry. It's also in the First Amendment. Maybe people think about the First Amendment as speech, which it is, religion, but it's also the right to petition the government. So that's part of our tradition. And Donald Trump has managed to keep the business community silent. There's very little outcry from the business community over what's going on. So, I mean, that's a big change in terms of the economic landscape. He's also challenged the independence of the Fed, the central bank of the United States, which has always been independent. And that's a kind of a core aspect of our economy. So that's a big change. An emphasis on cryptocurrency. The Biden administration was extremely hard on the cryptocurrency industry. Trump, on the other hand, has embraced crypto. He started his own cryptocurrency, in fact. And then I guess finally, kind of similar to that, is a huge alignment with big tech. So the Amazons and the Facebooks and, of course, Elon Musk. I mean, this Silicon Valley has always been considered sort of a bastion of democratic politics, and now that's also changed. So I'd say in 4 months, Trump has managed to make an enormous amount of impact in the economic landscape.
Mm-hmm. From a European perspective, Holger, since this so-called Liberation Day with the tariff announcements, what would you say has changed most in the relation of the EU and the US?
Well, I'm not sure if it started only at Liberation Day. I think it started already earlier. I mean, first of all, what we see is that the Commission and the European Union is reacting pretty unified. So this was a bit of a fear that Trump would be able to separate out several member states and that he was playing one against the others. And I think this is not really happening. So the EU is quite unified. Secondly, the EU has been relatively quiet in terms of retaliation. So far, they have not imposed any tariffs. I mean, they announced tariffs, but they suspended them. So I think the approach was very reasonable, very cautious, not trying to make things worse. And I think so far it has worked out. But what is even more important, I think, is that in other policy areas, the EU is switching gear, I would say. First of all, they are looking for other partners in the world in terms of trade. They are looking for trade agreements. They are trying to negotiate and finalize trade agreements with important regions. And this was not the case a couple of years ago. And they are trying to make EU itself more competitive in order to play a role in this global competition. So I think these were maybe the most important changes we saw after the Trump election and finally also Liberation Day.
So we all experience that the tariffs by Donald Trump are sometimes given and taken away on a daily basis, which leaves markets very often in a bit of a chaotic state of mind, I would say. Can one already say that there will be clear winners and losers from all of this, Andrew?
That's a tough question to answer, especially, on any given day. You're right. I mean, I'll start by saying no one that we've spoken to, certainly no members of ours. And we were in the United States, in April with, Mr. Kavlat, our association president, no one is happy about what's going on. So no one's saying, this is a good thing. So I think finding winners is going to be, a little bit hard here. And I'm not just talking about European companies, but also American companies, the companies that are the customers of our members. I mean, it's perhaps if the definition of a winner is someone who's not significantly harmed by the tariffs, then perhaps you could find some winners among our members in the sense that, I mean, our industry is quite well positioned competitively in the United States. Many of our subsectors don't have a meaningful competition in the United States. So in that sense, we are well positioned. There is also, I would just add, you're starting to see some press in, the Wall Street Journal and other outlets about how the tariffs are marginally helping some producing industries that are already in the United States. So obviously steel, certain raw materials and other industrial inputs. So there are marginally some winners, but overall, I think it's a net negative for the economy and certainly for the manufacturing economy writ large.
Given the fact that Donald Trump's rhetoric against the EU is especially harsh, and he seems to be on a revenge mission against Europe, do we have to be afraid that Europe's going to be a real loser in this tariff war, meaning being hit the hardest at the end of the day?
I personally don't see that. Now, of course, you know, you always have to, there's the famous saying about Donald Trump that, you know, that some of his adherents like to say in Congress, for example, when they're asked by journalists, which is, don't listen to the words, look at the actions. And I think if you look at the actions that he took in his first term and you look at the actions he's taken in his second term so far, that China was and is and remains, you know, the adversary and the target. So I think that's what I would focus on primarily. And at the end of the day, I mean, the United States and Europe have a much more symbiotic relationship than, say, you know, the United States and China, or China and Europe, for example. And I think one reason is because, first of all, it's the largest economic zone in the world. It's the largest economic relationship, the U.S. and Europe. And also there's many things that the United States does that Europe can't do. And there's many things that Europe does that the United States can't do. So we, I think, need one another more than other big relationships.
Would the perspective from Brussels be the same, Holger?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, first of all, I said it before, the EU do not want to be provocative at the moment. So they try to calm things down and look at the facts and figures at the end of the day. And I would agree with Andrew that, of course, the rhetoric is rude against the European Union, but let's say the actions are, I mean, in a way expected. And so everybody is sort of irritated by the rhetoric, but trying to preserve a relationship that is necessary for Europe and that is necessary for the US. So I think the feeling is quite the same here.
So let's have a look at the actual situation for as long as it holds, Andrew. What are the most important tariffs right now, and what can we expect?
Well, so for our members, I mean, right now, just to, you know, there's a number of different tariffs. Obviously, they're changing from day to day in different countries, depending on who's talking to whom. But for our members, by far the most important is the so-called universal baseline tariff of 10% that now hits virtually all deliveries coming to the United States. All machinery products, all farming equipment, mobile machinery, et cetera. And there's no exceptions to that. Unlike the first term, there's no exception to this 10%. You can't apply for a waiver. You now have a 10% tariff that you have to grapple with, or your customer has to grapple with. The other one is a 25% tariff on steel and aluminum and derivative products. So we, you know, obviously our members are not exporting steel and aluminum, but there are some machinery products that have steel in them. And some of those products are on these lists. And so I'm talking particularly about spare parts. So some of our members are really struggling with, first of all, the 25% tariff on spare parts, but also the bureaucracy that goes along with it. There's a lot of new rules that have come out in the last few weeks, and we are trying to help our members grapple with all that.
I would assume that also the U.S.-Chinese tariff situation does place a big role for our companies too, right?
There are some companies in Germany that buy Chinese parts or inputs and then build them into a larger product, in which case it plays less of a role. But there are some that actually buy Chinese parts and then basically ship them to the United States. So they are country of origin China parts coming from, in this case, Germany. And yeah, in that case, now, you know, until recently, they had to deal with a 145% additional tariff on these parts. So that is a problem. However, just based on, you know, what I, the calls that are coming into my phone, it's much more the tariffs on Europe that are bothering people than tariffs on China.
Well, you mentioned that Canada and Mexico were hit first, so we might have the most experience there, and there are German companies producing in Mexico and in Canada too. So have we heard anything how they are dealing with the situation now with the extra tariffs?
There's not that many of our companies that are producing in Mexico for the U.S. market. There are a handful. I think the biggest, the bigger impact is on our customers. So the automotive, all the automotive OEMs have big plants in Mexico. All the Asian companies, all the American companies, and all the Europeans. So obviously the big three from Germany. And now they have to, instead of paying a 2.5% tariff at the border, they have to pay a 25% tariff at the border. And it's very, very hard for those companies to comply with the so-called USMCA rules of origin. So I think that's where you're going to find the most, long-term, most economic impact is sort of the impact on our customers.
So what have you heard from the companies? What are the reactions? Is there anyone actually relocating production already? Are they thinking about it? Or is it at the moment a state of shock probably and frozen?
Well, I think that's an interesting question. I mean, certainly the goal of the Trump administration, and they've said this over and over again, not just Trump himself, but J.D. Vance and others in his team. If you just bring your production to the U.S., you won't have a tariff problem anymore. And that, I think the impact is exactly the opposite of what's happening. So certainly there have been, I would say until the tariffs came on, our members were looking at the United States as sort of the next big opportunity. It has become increasingly difficult in China over the last few years, and the U.S. with a lot of industrial policy, talking about the Inflation Reduction Act, for example, lots of big tax subsidies for building projects. And people viewed that as the next big thing. And I think the tariffs have really stopped that in its tracks. And at a minimum, our members are kind of pressing pause and waiting to see what happens next before they make any big decisions. Of course, there's plenty of members who have made decisions already and they're already in process and they're going to continue to see those through. But I think the tariffs up to now have had really the exact opposite impact of what the what they want, which is to attract investment.
Hmm. So let's try a look into the crystal ball, and we'll start in Brussels. Donald Trump has set a timeline till July, beginning of July, to take his next steps. What will happen till then from the EU point of view, Holger?
I mean, just recently, the EU published a list of products that might be subject to tariffs, U.S. exports to the EU. It's a long list. I think basically all machinery products are on that. So let's say this is an instrument the EU is now bringing forward in order also to threat, I think, the U.S. government in order to make them also negotiate with the EU. So let's see if that is going to help. I think it's a right move to do that and also to show a bit of strength from the EU side, because otherwise Europe will be walked over, I suppose. And so let's see. I think we will see negotiations in the next coming weeks. I'm not sure if that's going to be completed by July. But of course, I mean, we have seen, let's say, measures that would prolong, let's say, the pause period for another 60 days or 90 days. So that's possible that this will be prolonged again. But I think the negotiations will start. And I believe that also the U.S. government will need some sort of success there, because by the end of the year, I suppose, they will need to show, as Andrew said, that there will be economic impulses and there will be sort of this economic situation will be sorted out a bit. So, yeah, I hope and I think also that there will be negotiations, and yeah, what comes out, it's difficult to say.
When you look at the Trump tactics with China, it would be hitting the EU even harder and then coming back somewhat. You know, I don't know. Will he reproduce that, Andrew, for the EU negotiations?
I don't think anybody can say. I mean, the stated reason for this incredibly, kind of high escalation with China was that China hit back. So China quickly retaliated on the Trump tariffs, and then Trump retaliated, and then China retaliated. And so we got up to 145% very quickly. And I think, you know, as Holger said, so the EU is now in a very cautious way, sort of putting its cards on the table and saying, this is what you're up against if you proceed. But there have been, as far as I know, no EU retaliation measures put into place. The ones that were put into place have been suspended. So, you know, I suppose if the EU really hits back hard, you could see an escalation like that. But, you know, Scott Bessent, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, referred to this, you know, 145% tariff level with China as a de facto embargo. I mean, you basically stop trade between these two blocks. So I find that hard to imagine with Europe, but of course, you know, anything's possible.
So one more into the crystal ball, it's kind of murky there, but would you believe in a trade agreement before July or at the beginning of July, you think it's possible with Europe and the US?
Well, when we were in Washington with Mr. Kavlat, we heard this consistently from all of the agencies and also from our sort of partner organizations, the US industry associations, that they want big offers. So, you know, if Europe comes to the table with a really big, exciting offer, then I think it's possible. But of course, you know, no sort of negotiating partner in their right mind would do that. No one would come and say, well, we're going to give you everything if you just take the tariffs away. So I think Europe obviously has a lot more, you know, leverage than that, and they're probably going to use it. So I think, you know, Trump did a deal, quote unquote, with the United Kingdom a few days ago. A lot of it is optics. A lot of it is show. It's theater. So, I mean, you know, Jean-Claude Juncker was actually quite effective in that regard. Maybe Ursula von der Leyen can also figure out a way to kind of give Trump a win, do some theater, and then, you know, kind of de-escalate. That would probably be a more realistic scenario.
Holger, is there anything that looks like a big offer to Donald Trump, any sort of gas buying package or anything that's been talked about in Brussels?
To be honest, even the talks that we had recently, I mean, the Commission people do not really mention that. Of course, the big topic is non-tariff barriers. So the typical things we are also criticizing about the EU, which means reporting obligations, so corporate sustainability reporting directive, corporate sustainability due diligence directive, all these regulations that put a lot of bureaucracy on companies in Europe, but also in the US, that could be something that we also use as a leverage, because we are working on simplifying them anyway. So I think it would be an interesting move to say, look, we are moving into your direction. We are simplifying. We are simplifying for you. Okay, we're simplifying also for the Europeans, but we're also simplifying for you. So that could be something that at least on stage could be sold on the in the US, I suppose. And I think that would be something that could work.
Let's have a closer look to what's happening on the shop floor, so to speak. Andrew, the goods that are being delivered to the US right now, are they being unloaded in the harbors, or are there big piles of cargo ships who won't get anything done?
Well, we haven't heard any reports from the members that goods are being turned away for that reason. Sales contracts spell out who is responsible for paying the tariff, and that's generally adhered to. So in some cases, indeed, there are, you know, we have a lot of member companies with long development cycles. You know, to do a custom automation line or a packaging line can take a year to design and build and then deliver. So there are contracts that were signed in March and April of last year that are only now being delivered. And indeed, the sales contract spells out who pays the tariff. So there are some unwelcome surprises for the party who's left, you know, holding the bag. But I haven't heard anybody say that their delivery was not taken, let's say. Indeed, when we were in the U.S. in April, we, you know, collectively spoke with about 50 companies. We visited some companies. We had a reception, et cetera. And lots of them were stockpiling, have done stockpiling since the election for their own goods, just to make sure that they can have a fresh supply until, you know, a certain period. So the sort of logistical aspect, I think, has not been a huge problem, but certainly the question of, you know, who's paying the tariff is the big question.
The other big question that Donald Trump has brought up on purpose, of course, is will companies relocate and start producing in the U.S. that they haven't before? Do we see or hear any signs from our members that there are earnest deliberations or even plans already to follow that logic?
Well, not because of the tariffs. I think maybe one thing to bring into this conversation, which I think is also important, is everybody is talking about tariffs in the United States right now for obvious reasons. But let's also not forget the United States is our biggest export market outside of the EU. It's our biggest investment location outside of the EU. So, I mean, it's such a massive consumer market. It's a place that everybody wants to be. Everybody feels like they need to be. So, you know, if you're thinking long term, you're thinking, I need to be in the United States. I need to have a U.S. strategy of some kind. So there are certainly members who are thinking about investing and thinking about growing there. There were before Trump and there will be after Trump. So but I don't think the tariffs are accelerating those plans. I think if anything, they are slowing them down.
What are the major hurdles or what are the roadblocks that you have to cross when you want to start the production in the U.S. or do more business than before?
Well, I guess those are two separate questions. The first question about production, the biggest problem our members have in America is actually not tariffs. It's not regulation. It's not politics. It's finding the right people, having the horsepower to produce in the United States. They cannot find enough people and they can't find the right people. And then those people often leave. So those are the things that our members are really grappling with. And that's one of the reasons why we have, if you look at even our largest member companies, many of them, even if they have a large presence in the United States, it's sales, service, warehouse, and it's not production. So I think that's a hurdle that has not really related to Donald Trump, and it will be there, you know, for the foreseeable future.
And it won't change because of tariffs, of course.
Absolutely not. It'll just make building a production more expensive, which is not helpful.
Hmm. For many years now, the U.S. has solved this problem with their lack of skilled workers by, you know, producing in Mexico and then maybe Canada too, but mostly Mexico. Now, Donald Trump is trying to slam that door too, basically. What does it tell us about the friendship or the partnership with the border countries and what's going to happen there? Is NAFTA dead by now or what do you foresee here?
Well, yeah, I mean, NAFTA is not dead. So the successor agreement is called USMCA, which is, you know, just a new name for NAFTA. You have tariffs on Mexico and Canada. Like I said, that was, to me, the biggest surprise of this the last 4 months. However, the USMCA compliant goods are still coming in tariff-free. So to that extent, the agreement is still active. And indeed, the agreement requires the three countries to renegotiate in 2026, so next year. You know, one could look at this as just, you know, a big Trump-style lever to try to get the best, you know, renegotiation for next year. But yeah, I mean, at this point, I think there's a lot of, you know, people are really burned by it, particularly the Canadians. I mean, they're extremely upset by this. We were in Hanover in April and the Canadians were there as the partner country. And there's a lot of discussion about this. But, you know, the countries are still so dependent on one another. They share these massive borders and it's a huge economic zone. So I wouldn't say that the agreement is dead. But yeah, it's a big problem. And it's, like I said, a big surprise. And whether, you know, they can kind of put things back together long term, it's going to take a long time to rebuild the trust. That's for sure.
Mm. We learned in Hanover that elbows up is the slogan the Canadians are now hurling against the United States. Holger, would you say that this is a slogan for Brussels' attitude towards the U.S. these days too?
Yeah, maybe. But maybe another slogan is even better, and that would be Europe, grow up. You know, I mean, we have been in Europe, I mean, we have been quiet for a long time, and we have been living quite easily in this situation, rule-based trade, world order. And now this is changing. And I think in the Commission and also in the European Parliament, everybody is realizing that. And everybody knows Europe has to play a different role in the future. And that means that we have to be ready to pick up also a fight or a deal with the US, and that we have to be that we have to grow up, and that we have to become adults in the geopolitical new world that we are living. And I think this is probably one of the major impacts that Donald Trump has already had on EU politics.
You mentioned, Holger, that our president, Bertram Cablard, just met with EU Commissioner Stéphane Séjourné. So what was the impression you took away from that talk? How is the EU really preparing itself for this new role in the world market, not only with facing an aggressive America, but also an even more aggressive China and other countries?
Well, I think, first of all, what we strongly realize is that in the Commission, industry is again on the top of the agenda of the political priorities. So that's very, very positive. And Stéphane Séjourné, who is the Commissioner for Industry, was really making that very clear. So that's, I think, very important. And that has also to do with the situation with the US, but also geopolitically, because everybody is now realizing that we need a strong industry in Europe and that we have to do something for that. And I think that's I think the first takeaway. The second takeaway is that, of course, we have to make sure that, I mean, we are not going too extreme when it comes to the question of being autonomous or even independent. Obviously, in the Commission, there are also thoughts about very, very strict by European rules and trying to have a bit too protectionist approach. So our role will be also to find a way in the middle and try to grow up in Europe, but not to become a closed shop, a protectionist region in the world.
So to sum all of this up, Europe and the US always had a very special transatlantic relationship. Why don't you just tell us what will this relationship look like from now on? What will be its characterization, Andrew and Holger?
Well, so I actually pulled one number for that topic here from a new report from the AmCham EU and US Chamber of Commerce. They do a transatlantic business report every year. It's really excellent. And they say the U.S.-Europe commercial relationship is the largest in the world, valued at $9.5 trillion U.S. dollars. So it's bigger than anything else. And no other regions of the world are as deeply integrated with each other. So you talk about investment, you talk about jobs, obviously security. So, you know, that sort of baseline I don't think is going to change. But as Holger just mentioned, the sort of personal relationship, if you want to call it that, or the personal political relationship, I think is changed forever. I don't think we're going to return to this sort of special feeling, I don't think, at least at the sort of leadership level, because even if you have change of power in Washington over the coming years and decades, people will see the U.S. as not the same as it was before. So I think the future of the transatlantic relationship will be highly transactional, much more sort of negotiation oriented, and less so sort of values and friendship oriented at the political level.
Would you agree, Holger? Is that what we're going to see?
Yes, I absolutely agree. I mean, when we talk to politicians in the last days and weeks, many of them said, look, I mean, when we are thinking about diversifying, we were looking at the US as one of the areas where we can trust in. Now, as of now, we have to look at the US as also a country where we sort of have to be careful of. Doesn't mean we have to block them, but we have to be careful of. And I think this describes very well that there will be a sort of change in the mentality and in the trust of the relationship, which will also stay for a while. But I think in terms of economics, we are dependent on each other, and that will stay for a while.
Donald Trump is shaking up the world. That much is clear. It is far less clear what kind of world we will see in the end, especially with regards to international trade. Trump wants to be disruptive, and that, at least, he has managed pretty well so far. His presidency will remain a challenge for European companies, and VDMA will continue to help its members to cope with all these new question marks. Thank you, Andrew Adair and Holger Kunze, for your insights. We hope you enjoyed this episode of VDMA's Industry Podcast, and if you'd like to hear more, you can listen to all of our other episodes on the major podcast platforms Spotify, Apple, and Podigy. Or you can find them and a lot of other useful information on our website, vdma.org. Thank you for listening, and stay tuned.
The Industry Podcast of VDMA.